From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. Jenny Slate struck internet gold when her animated shell Marcel went viral. Next came roles on the little and big screen, Parks and Recreation, Big Mouth, and The Secret Life of Pets. She started as a stand-up, but life isn't always funny, even for a comedian. And in her new book, she looks inward for a deep meditation on love, loss, and finding the joy again. This hour on Point, my conversation with Jenny Slate. Join us. How do you know Jenny Slate? What's your question? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. With us from Warwick, Rhode Island, is Jenny Slate. She's the author of the new book, Little Weirds. Jenny, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Hi, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Well, can't wait to dig into the book. But first, I want to play a little clip of one of your many characters, the internet's favorite anthropomorphic shell. Here is Marcel, the shell with shoes on. In 2010, this stop-motion movie went viral. It's been viewed more than 30 million times. Jenny Slate co-wrote it, and she's the voice of Marcel. Here it is.
My name is Marcel, and I'm partially a shell, as you can see on my body, but I also have shoes and a face, so I like that about myself, and I like myself, and I have a lot of other good qualities as well. Guess what I wear as a hat?
What?
A lentil. One time I nibbled on a piece of cheese, and my cholesterol went up to 900.
Wow, one eye, one shell, two shoes. That little guy was a phenomenon, wasn't he?
Yeah, I guess he was.
So what inspired the voice of Marcel?
I worked as a featured cast member on Saturday Night Live the previous year before that, and sort of thought I had done every single voice I could possibly do, and that there was kind of like nothing left that I hadn't tried. But there was one weekend where I was at a wedding, and I was sharing a hotel room with, I think, like five other people, and it was just very cramped. And for some reason, this voice popped up, and I kept saying that I felt very small and very squished, and I just kept doing the voice all weekend, and I guess it just kind of turned into something else.
I started watching it yesterday at the office, and people were crowding around me, and the request, please have her do the voice, please have her do the voice. All right, so I've asked, you got to do it.
Sure. Okay, hold on. I have to pop one headphone out so I can put my finger in my ear.
All right, I guess like this is kind of the voice that Marcel talks in, but yeah, I don't really know what I'm supposed to say because nobody told me that I was going to be on the radio today, and I actually had some other errands planned, so I can't stay on for that long, but I guess thanks for having me, and happy holidays, I guess. Happy holidays.
Does that work for you?
That's good. Yeah, that was good. Somehow we can't get enough. 30 million people later viewing that. It's just great. So you've had a career, big career beyond Marcel, of course, in comedy and acting. You've been on the scene more than a decade, from Parks and Rec to Big Mouth, movies beyond that. Was it your intention to make a splash in every genre, or was this by design or just a happy accident?
Everything is a happy accident in my life, or a happy occurrence, I guess. I think I just want to be able to be creative as often as possible. And luckily for me, I didn't limit that very much. I think I just kind of spread it as far as it could go, naturally. Mm-hmm.
So you've got this another project now, this new book called Little Weirds. First, tell me about the title, Jenny.
Well, the title is actually just lifted out of one of the second to last piece in the book, which is called Blue Hour. And it's a piece about trying to find a way to reassemble your self-respect and your own sort of personal ideology for how to be in the world after you've been through things that may have shaken your personal faith, like a secular faith, not a religious faith. And there's a line in which I'm sort of talking to myself and saying that I'm going to have to learn how to be in the world and be flexible, but to protect all of the little weirds that make up who I am. And so it's not meant to say, like, this book is filled with all little weird things, but more that I, like everyone else, am filled with peculiar and precious little bits, and they make up who I am as a whole, and they're worthy of care.
You write about a lot of things that so many of us have experienced, but you write in such a unique and interesting way, from heartbreak and sadness to joy, to returning to your parents' home as an adult, you know, personal growth. Read a little bit, would you?
Sure.
That first one, the introduction.
Oh, the introduction.
Yeah, reading
okay.
Number one.
Hold on. I'm going to get that for you. I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
I have a printout. Oh, I got it. Okay. Just as I get scared to perform, I'm afraid to write this book. Across the board, I just get so scared. But I don't want to live in a constant state of trepidation. I want to live in front of you, with you. I tremble myself to pieces when I perform. I also put myself back together, and I leave without a limp. Recently, my life fell to pieces. These things happened. Pummeling heartbreak, the sickening experience of watching a racist, homophobic, misogynist bully sit right down in the Oval Office, loss of confidence, astounding loneliness, disempowerment, and exhaustion. This book is the act of pressing onward through an inner world that was dark and dismantled. This book is me putting myself back together so that I can dwell happily in our shared world.
Hmm. Stage fright still? You get stage fright? Is that
yes,
what I'm reading there?
Still.
Is that what I'm seeing? Yeah?
No, more just like old feelings of not being prepared.
So
that's just shame. If you're hearing any glitch there, that's just shame.
I got it.
Yeah, that's just shame.
So as a comedian, did you feel pressure to write a funny book? Because some of it's funny, but not really, right?
Yeah, you know, no, I didn't. I think what happens for me is I'm aware of the pressure to write a funny book, and I'm aware that to write a book of, like, humorous, snarky essays about, you know, what it's like on the inside of whatever would be perhaps, like, easier to get a lot of hands on and perhaps more lucrative. Yeah, I'm just, like, not really interested in that. And luckily or unluckily for me, I tend to want to do what I want to do, at least creatively. I don't think I'm, like, a jerk in my social scene, but if I think of my creative space as the one space where my preferences are kind of are number one, and the deal there is that means that, like, maybe a lot of people won't be into it, but that's how I need to live.
There are a few parallels between this book, Jenny Slate, and your new Netflix comedy special.
Mm-hmm.
In both, you cover a period of transition after a painful separation and divorce. How is the experience of writing this material for a book different than writing material for comedy? Same material, very different use of it.
Sure. And I think that's the most exciting thing to me as a person. I think I'm often trying to prove that while you have to have a consistent identity and it's important to, you know, keep an eye on your self-respect or keep showing up in your community as a person that can be relied on, that what happens to one person doesn't necessarily need to be an experience that is defined by, like, failure or success or have one meaning, and that there are many tones to a singular experience. And if I can find all of the different ones, it means I just have more in my life and more openness, more options for how to move onward and harvest what happened to me. So writing the book, the margins are just a lot wider because it doesn't have to be funny. The way that if you say, I'm doing a stand-up comedy show now, it has to be funny. That's the pledge that you make, and the people pay the money so that they can laugh. And a lot of times they really need that, and there's a responsibility there. And so, you know, when you do comedy, it has to be funny. You can dab it with some sorrow, but you can't weigh it down. And the book just is just allowed to have a bit more in there, and so I like that.
I read that this book saved your life. How so?
You know, my dad, his name's Ron Slate. He's a poet. And he's a poet whether or not he's writing or he's just existing. He's just a sort of a lyrical person. And I look to him for wisdom. And he said to me when I was starting to write this book that what frightened him about my sadness was that I appeared to be in stasis. And, you know, stasis is when you stop and when you stop growing and perhaps when you've given up. And that's kind of when you stop living, but you are letting something happen to you. And I think I was starting to be like that. And I really, really couldn't see myself as someone lovable or viable. And I remember saying to my parents that I felt like I was stopping my life because I felt that I wasn't an optimist anymore. And my optimism is astounding to me. I don't even really know why it's there, but it is the wellspring of my spirit, and I felt that that wasn't there. So this book brought that back for me.
Well, we're here with actor and comedian Jenny Slate discussing her life, her career, and her new book. It's called Little Weirds. What's your favorite Jenny Slate role? Are you hooked on Marcel? I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking with comedian Jenny Slate this hour. Her new book is Little Weirds. She also stars in a new stand-up comedy special out on Netflix. You can join the conversation. Fans of Jenny Slate, what do you want to know about her creative process, about her? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. In her new Netflix comedy special, my guest Jenny Slate interviews her dad about ghosts in her childhood home, which she also writes about at length in her new book, Little Weirds. Here's that.
Parents should be really careful about what they tell their kids about ghosts.
Yeah. Obviously.
I never thought to hide the story. Because I don't think I really understood the impact.
That's what's really funny, though, is that, like, if you had never told us, I wonder how we would be different. And I started to think, like, what would I be like if I just was one of those people that, like, grew up in a house without ghosts?
Jenny Slate, you grew up actually in Milton, Massachusetts, not far from where I sit here. And you write in your book
yes.
about this house of yours, which was haunted. And there it is coming up in your Netflix special. But you write about it also in your book. What's the ghost story you grew up with, Jenny?
Well, my dad can definitely tell it better than I can. But the abbreviated version of it is that my parents moved into the house And the furniture of the people who had lived there was still there, and there was a runner going up the stairs. And when they were ripping up the runner, they found a packet of love letters that were written to one of the people that had lived in the house, but they weren't from that person's partner. They were from an other, a man who was sort of writing from different ports, different seaports around the world, and they assumed that he was, you know, some sort of like a sea captain or something. And my father took the packet of letters. He decided that he was going to write a poem about them, and he put them in his office. And that night, my mother smelled pipe smoke, and my dad smoked a pipe at that time. And so she thought that he had left his pipe burning. And when she woke him up to say, you're going to burn down our house because you left your pipe burning, he said, I didn't smoke my pipe tonight. And so somehow, this is the part I don't understand, which is weirder than the ghost story, they decided that there was a robber in the house smoking a pipe, which is not – I've never robbed a home, but I feel like you don't pack a pipe and just, like, puff it while you
– A dead getaway.
While
yeah,
you
a
steal
dead
things. But so my dad went out into the hall and looked over the banister, and he says that he saw –
the ghost of a man, of a sea captain coming up the stairs, and that he smelled the pipe smoke and that he sort of saw him and didn't see him and really had that moment, like, could this possibly be happening to me right now? And that's kind of what we lived with, that and other things. My mother and my sister also saw a woman walk out of the farthest room off of the front hall, and the woman was in silhouette and sort of floated up into a chandelier. Yeah, but I've never seen any.
But it was a common occurrence. I mean, was it not, you know, your family and these ghosts all around?
Yeah, I mean, I think the vibe was there. The idea that the ghosts were there and that we were living in a house that was a shared space, like an active highway between dimensions, was like not a maybe it is, but it really felt like, yeah, this is what it is. And I'm interested in that because I was never, although I loved our house, I was never at ease. I always felt like something was going to shock me or surprise me or reveal more reality than I could handle. Reality being, it's not just you here. There are many dimensions happening at once, which seems smart to me in a way. But yeah, so that's how I was born and formed, you know, in that my identity comes from there.
I got a board full of calls for you. So let's go first.
And I also did find that piece that you wanted me to read called A Prayer, if you would like it at any point.
Okay, let's get these callers in first, and then we'll go to that. I've got Shauna here first from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Shauna, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, go ahead. You're with Jenny Slate. What's your question?
Hi, Shauna.
Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
How are you? I just wanted to say I've been a fan for a long time. And, you know, pretty much since Parks and Rec. And then I had listened to your interview when you were on Unqualified with Anna Faris, and you were talking about self-discovery and loving yourself and exploring your body. And I really appreciated that, and I felt like I needed to hear that in that moment. And what's even crazier, last night I was watching, just like randomly scrolling through TV, and you were on an interview. It was black and white. I don't recall what it was called, but you were discussing your book. Yeah, I was watching it last night. So the fact that I turned on the radio today and you're like, you know, on the radio now, I'm like, oh my God, I have to call and see if I can say hi. So I just... Yeah, just wanted to say, like, how awesome you were and how much you inspired me. And I really enjoy you, and I definitely will look out for your book and purchase whatever, you know, I have to.
Thank you, Shauna. Thank you so much for the call
you,
from
Shauna.
Buffalo.
That's really nice.
Hey, read one of your essays for Shauna and for all of us about prayer, one of the shortest essays, actually, in the book.
Yes, it's actually very short, and strangely, like, it started as a tweet, and a lot of the pieces in this book come from thoughts that I had. Although Twitter can be, you know, a wild space that often doesn't feel good, and is a place where language gets dismantled, and also the truth gets dismantled. I actually found it to be like a strange void to just sort of yell into. So this is called A Prayer, and it just says, as the image of myself becomes sharper in my brain and more precious, I feel less afraid that someone else will erase me by denying me love.
So go deeper into that. Did writing that image help you become more, become sharper? I mean, what did that do? Explain what you mean by this.
Yeah, I think it's you know, it's titled A Prayer because it's not in place for me yet. In fact, I think it will probably be my life's work as a person to continue to sharpen my focus on who I am, how I've behaved, what I've done, and make that be the source of how I am. I'm really solid as a person on this earth, rather than hoping for outside validation or being afraid that if someone says, I don't want to be with you anymore or you can't work here anymore, that a part of me goes away as well, rather than just that person or that situation. And that's been really hard for me. And so I wrote this as what I, you know, what I hope to feel, what I often feel. And a prayer is something that you look back to give you a reminder of what you believe to be true, and to give you an arrow for where to go if you are to be your best self.
Let's get Dan in here from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Dan. You're on the air with Jenny Slate.
Hi, Jane. Hi, Jenny. I've been a big fan ever since Bestie by Bestie. Oh, hi.
Cool. You're really real. Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. It's good stuff. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about being a comedian specifically from New England. You know, we get so much personality, especially in comedy, coming out of L.A. or New York, even if that's not technically where everyone is from. I was really happy to see that in your most recent Netflix special, you were back there in that milieu, and it seemed like it informed your work. Would you be willing to talk a little bit more about what it's like to be from New England and go back there as an adult, and does that inform your work?
Yeah, I think it does inform my work. I love the oldness of New England, and I love the saltiness of New Englanders. And my own mother, who is a really sweet person, her personal vernacular is, I'm going to bomb in, I'm going to bomb out, I'm going to wolf down a yogurt, you know? Like, it's just, the language is this, like, sort of like confronting, engaged, I'm going to get in there, I'm going to rip it apart, like daily vernacular. And I really, really like that. And it is sort of, it's a funny partner to my personality, because I think I'm gentle and fragile. But I think one of the things that's made me into a really strong person and a person who's strong enough to examine things and say what they are is the culture that I come from. And I just find New England to – it's so funny, but it really has it all. I love being here, and I like that it is often difficult in the best way. There's, like, no better feeling to me than when the snow is heavy around your leg and you have to, you know, it's on the top of your boot the second you step in, and you really have to rip your leg up through that snow in order to move forward. And I don't get that in L.A., and I just think there's a confidence built in to living in New England and a real respect for how wild the ocean is and how high the pines are. You know, I'm just into it. And it feels spiritual. It's in my comedy. Yeah.
Dan, thanks so much for the call. Jenny, I want to play this clip from Parks and Recreation. You played Mona Lisa Saperstein on NBC's Parks and Rec. Mona Lisa's brother describes you as the worst person in the world. So here's Mona Lisa talking to Tom, her boss at the clothing store where she works.
Boss man, I need to leave early today because my shrink got me and him tickets to a Pitbull concert. And I already committed to that. And so if you say that I can't go, it's like you're taking something away from me.
Store's really busy. I kind of need you to stay.
I totally hear you. I also don't like what you're saying. So if you say no, I will start a fire in the bathroom.
Okay, I guess you can go.
Yeah, I know I can.
This kind of relates to one of the essays in your book, Little Weirds, Jenny, where you talk about, you write about how you were always getting into trouble for being wild as a kid, right? You write, wildness belongs in people. Talk about that wildness and how that informed your path to being a performer. And how did you learn to make wildness an asset?
That's a really nice question. I always felt that whatever rhythms were happening inside of me were just not in sync with the ones that were happening in school or happening in synagogue or happening in the car. You know, I just felt that I was kind of, as I've said in this book, like bopping microscopically all the time to something else. And it's really hard to be a kid like that who can't pay attention, who is hyper, hyper interested in things and wants to be free, especially since if you're a kid and you want to be free, you're also probably in danger. You know, if you just like want to run around in the woods, it's hard for parents to let you do that. And I think just for a while I felt really bad about that and I didn't frame it up as wildness, which is beautiful and which we need. And I think that one of the reasons why I was so excited to become an adult was that I wanted all the same things that I wanted as a kid. I just was allowed to do them. And I just think that the reason why I learned to accept my wildness by understanding it as a group of really, really beautiful preferences and by trusting the more domesticated part of myself to not roar in people's faces. I don't know if that answers that question, but I just think it's really growing up and realizing, look, I'm looking around the world. I don't think that what I want is hurting other people. And And I think it's really, really important not to let it die.
Jenny, you talk a lot about birth in this book as well. When you were born, where you were born, and also the times you've been reborn on soccer fields, at Columbia, in college. Why was birth a theme you kept coming back to in this book?
It sort of relates to what we were talking about before. I tend to jerk away from the idea that there's just one chance for something. Of course, in our life, there's going to be, you know, the big ones, the actual birth or the actual death, or the actual birth of, you know, a child or something like that. But I tend to live with the idea that the cycles are more than what we say there are. It's not just us with one birth. And then, you know, if you live here in Massachusetts, four seasons every year, and those are the circles that you get. I actually need to know that there are more and that there are times where you really, really can start again, sort of a linked up series of mini incarnations, reincarnations, I mean, that I keep my eye on. And that it's meant to be that way, that change is meant to happen and nothing is meant to stay the same. And birth and death happen in little ways all of the time, and that's a scary thing and a lucky thing as well.
Here's Sam in Yellow Springs, Ohio. Hi, Sam. You're on the air with Jenny Slate.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
So I myself am a fledgling screenwriter. I'm a barista, but you are like a huge inspiration to me. And I love all your work. So I just wanted to know if there were any people you felt you could name that were inspirations to you.
Amy Sedaris. Yeah, Amy Sedaris was like a major, major one for me when I was a barista. I loved and love her work, and I love that she exists in this world to the point where I think I am too shy to meet her. but I love her. I absolutely love her. And I'm also really into the artist and writer Myra Kalman. And the reason why these two women who are they're different in their work, but they're also really similar in that they both are speaking in very, very unique creative voices, and they both seem to need to do their work no matter whether or not anyone will see it. And I think when you're starting your work, it's really scary to think, like, is anyone ever going to see this? And although that's obviously a concern that makes sense, it is not the most important one in terms of creating the work. And I would enjoy their work and wish to be as successful and special as them, but keeping them in mind when I would just be like, you know, writing something in my apartment after working as a barista all day in this bakery in Brooklyn, I could feel warmed just by the work. And that's why they're important to me.
Thanks for the call. Jenny, do you use comedy as a coping mechanism in some way?
Probably. I mean, I don't think I'm the kind of person that makes jokes to, shuffle away from not wanting to discuss something. I think I'm actually very direct, and sometimes that can probably even be annoying to the people who are close to me. I want to talk about everything. But I think a coping mechanism also sounds bad sometimes, but for me, it's, again, like, how do you regenerate something? How do you take something that if you don't move it from here, it will stay in this sort of trough of unmentionable, embarrassing, too gross to show other people, too sad to show other people? And so comedy, maybe it's coping, but it's also, it's just like the little change machine. You just run it through that.
We're talking with Jenny Slate from Parks and Rec, from Big Mouth, Bob's Burgers, The Secret Life of Pets. She's the author of a new book of personal essays called Little Weirds. And we'd love to have you join the conversation. Does humor help you through tough times? Does it heal you? I'm Jane Clayson. More of your calls after this break. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university. shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking with actor and comedian Jenny Slate this hour, and you can join the conversation. Aspiring comedians, writers, and actors, what are you hearing in Jenny's journey, in Jenny's words, in Jenny's writings? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Jenny Slate starred in the 2014 dramedy Obvious Child as Donna, a 20-something comedian who becomes unexpectedly pregnant. Here's a clip from one of Donna's comedy sets at the beginning of the movie, right after her boyfriend leaves her for her best friend.
In case you can't tell from my deep ridges on my face, I was recently dumped up with by a human male who is still alive, so good for him. I feel like when someone does something bad, they should just die. But instead, we die a slow death and watch their happiness bloom. Mm-hmm.
Let me get Dan in here on that point. Dan from Marshfield, Massachusetts. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Hi, so, yeah, Dan. Obvious Child was my first exposure to Jenny, and it struck me just the raw power of emotion and the vulnerability interlaced with the comedy and the very human way that abortion was addressed. It was just like, it absolutely blew me away, and I just wanted to you know, express my appreciation for that and give you an opportunity to speak on your experience making this film. And wonder, you know, how much of that came from your personal experience?
Well, the film was written and directed by Gillian Robespierre. It's not my experience, although I do stand-up comedy, and when it came to those comedy sets that Donna does, Gillian would tell me what she wanted me to talk about as the character, and then I would improvise the set. And then we would sort of, like, go back. We didn't have very many takes to do with indie films. You just, like, don't have that much time. And we filmed those at about 6 a.m. in a closed-down bar. I lent my stand-up experience to those scenes. It's a strange blend of, like, it's not really me, but it's the way that I do stand-up. And Gillian had written out all this stand-up, and I just, like, wasn't able to do it because it didn't feel authentic to me. So we decided to go with my more natural rhythm there. And the other thing I'll say about making that film is that I didn't really know what it was to be a feminist or an activist before I worked with Gillian and Elizabeth Holm, our producer. And while the film opened me up to the different areas in which I would like to perform, and I love to do drama and would like to do more of it, it also just really opened me up to the world and allowed me to engage in a way that felt meaningful, and it really changed me forever in that way.
Mm. Dan, thanks so much for the call.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, good we got that clip, too.
Yeah.
You describe, Jenny, in your book, Little Weirds, what you call a period of trench times. Trench
yes.
times, which sounds an awful lot like depression to
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
Describe what trench times felt like to you.
Yes, trench times is depression. there have been periods in my life when I've really had to deal with that head on. And again, I like to rename things so that they seem like mine and that they're not in a rigid definition that has, like, only a few solutions. And I think whenever I add a sort of infusion of creativity into anything, even depression, which can seem like it will never end, it starts to loosen stuff up and strangely become fun. But for me, trench times seems like I will not poke my head up
out of the trench. Like, I have to stay down there even though it's muddy and it's bad and it's part of a war that, like, doesn't even seem like mine. When I feel depressed or I have anxiety, I definitely experience it. But there's also this other feeling that's like, this is an imposition. It's at odds with my personality. It doesn't hold up my belief system. I feel oppressed by it. And so I wrote this piece called Trench Time's Dream Dog, which I do have in front of me, about how to get out of there sometimes. And it's not easy always, but, you know, sometimes there can be little tricks. Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones. I have so many callers here. Let me get them in. Freya is in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hi, Freya. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm a little starstruck right now. Holy moly.
Hi. Welcome to the radio.
Thank you. I just want to say your comedy special and your book really speak to me as a young woman. It's really, really special.
Good.
So I'm still in high school. I heard you were on the radio, and I'm actually, like, snuck out of class to talk to you right now.
I was going
to
ask. Shouldn't you be in class? Okay, but all right. We'll allow it.
I'm in Hollywood. It's okay. It's okay. As a TA, I want. But you seem really confident in your identity and who you are as a person. And I was wondering if you have any advice for young women or high schoolers struggling to figure out who they are.
Well, I mean, high school was not, like, my best time, for sure. And you know what? I guess I am confident in my identity. I know who I am. And part of that just comes from knowing what I'd like to be like and behaving that way and trying my hardest. Although I make a ton of mistakes. And I think that confidence comes from not being, like, mean to oneself about having weaker parts. I can be a very insecure person, and I can be very doubtful and scared and jealous and, you know, just, like, weak sometimes. But the reason why I have, I think, a good experience as myself is that I don't kick any of those things out and say, like, you shouldn't be here. I try to soothe them. And I guess if I wish that I could have said anything to myself as a younger person, it's that you're not supposed to be mean to the parts of yourself that feel embarrassing. Those are the parts that are asking for love, and you're the person who's strong enough to love them, give them love, and help them to incorporate into a stronger whole.
Mm.
Yeah.
You write a little bit about being bullied as a kid and the feelings of not always fitting in, and those are themes that remind me of the TV show Big Mouth. You explore a lot of those themes in that show where you're the voice of Missy, who apparently is a fan of our own Meghna Chakrabarty. So I'm going to play this scene. Missy's boyfriend Andrew brings up the idea of going to a high school party.
Who's that?
Oh, it was Nick. His sister's throwing some high school party, and he invited us.
Wow. Do you want to go?
Deeply!
Stop it.
Because on NPR, Meghna Chakrabarty says that couples should do new brave things together, and a high school party sounds pretty brave.
Well, I mean, if Meg Jabroni said that, but what do we tell your parents?
We're going to see a movie.
So learning to sort of, you know, step out of yourself and remove that shell and not be afraid to, you know, speak up for yourself. Big themes in Big Mouth, for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, that character of Missy is one that I've kind of, like, played in iterations over the years. And I think Nick and the writers at Big Mouth have done a really good job of like, just making her very, very clear. And she is kind of she's a dork, I guess. Like, she could be classified as a dork. But Missy's experience is her own and is really positive, and I'm happy for that. She feels a lot, and I perform her a lot, like myself as a seventh grader. But I think her experience is happier than mine, probably. Yeah.
Let's get another call in here. Rachel in Evans, Georgia. Hi, Rachel. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air with Jenny Slate.
Hi. Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm also totally starstruck here. Jenny, I just wanted to share my personal experience of how comedy really helped me get through a really difficult mental health time. I moved to New York City. It was like a really stressful time, and watching you as Mona Lisa, Saperstein on Parks and Rec, and really utilizing comedy to kind of just get me out of a really dark place was instrumental, and probably the most instrumental beyond, like, more beyond therapy. It was life changing. And so I just wanted to thank you for your type of comedy. And I loved Obvious Child, and you're incredible. And the healing power really is true.
I'm really glad. That makes me feel really good. It's nice to know that I can have a positive effect. Yeah.
Rachel, thanks
Thank
so much
you.
For the call. So, Jenny, there are no fewer than 5 chapters titled I Died in Little Weirds, your book. And if the deaths are not literal, of course. One's a moment of grief after your divorce. One's a moment of simple pleasures while you're making a sandwich with your dad. I mean, there are lots of... Well, once imagining your death as an old woman, right, in a town by the sea. Talk about this particular theme in an otherwise hopeful book.
Yeah, I think these pieces are also hopeful, even though they're sad. And some of them are really happy. The I Died Sardines piece, which is about making a sandwich for my dad, is about being so happy with simple pleasures that you kind of like wilt and bloom again and wilt and bloom again, that it's so overstimulating that you kind of just like pass away. And the hyperbole is fun. In the pieces like I Died Listening, which is about having to be in a frustrating conversation with a misogynist, you know, that's just more rage. But I think that I wanted to use this phrase because a lot of times it seems like if you say, I died, it means that either you're saying that you want to end your life, which I don't mean that, or you're just not allowed to play with those themes because I guess in like a Judeo-Christian sense, it's just seen as sacrilegious and disrespectful. And a lot of my work is taking phrases that interest me, that feel useful to me and feel right, and using them in a respectful way to show how big my feelings felt at that time. And that whatever it is, joy, rage, despair, that it brought me to the most concentrated version of that feeling. And it's playful, it's a little irreverent, but I think, again, it's hopeful because it says, I died and I'm still talking, which, you know, is against the rules. Usually when you die, you don't keep talking. And I just like to break it all down a little bit.
Back to the phones. Christy in Needham, Massachusetts. Hi, Christy. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Jenny, hi. I have a question for you. And you've answered this, I think, somewhat in your case. But would you believe that most good comedy comes from a place of pain?
I don't know. I don't think so. I wouldn't say most. I think a lot. But I think comedy that's good I think people want to crack the code there, but sometimes it's just good writing. But I think good comedy comes from focus. It just comes on what you're focused on and how you express that. I forget who said it, but my father told me something that another comedian said, which is that, you know, good comedians don't say funny things, but they say things funny. And I think comedy can come from pain, and a lot of it does. But I don't know. I think it's more than that. I think there's more than that, because a lot of my comedy, at least, and I think that my comedy is good, comes from happy things, too. Yeah. Mm.
Christy, thanks so much for the call. Donna is in Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Donna.
Hello, Jenny.
Hi, Donna.
I'm such a huge fan. And hi. And Mona Lisa Saperstein is one of my iconic favorites of yours. And I believe that your voice is so unique and has made all of your roles so iconic. Have you always sort of embraced, you know, your voice, or has there ever been a time where you felt self-conscious about it and how it moved through your career?
I've just never really thought about it until I started doing voice work. And no, I've never been self-conscious about it, but just have sort of been neutral. And I'm just used to it. I don't, weirdly, don't compare it to any other voices. So, I don't know. I think I'm pretty okay with it. Neither here nor there. I'm certainly not like, ooh, listen to me. The smooth sounds of me.
No,
I think I'm just, you know, there's very few parts of myself that I feel neutral about. But, I think it's totally here. Yeah, I don't really.
Donna, thanks so much.
Thank you, Donna.
Thanks for the call. So a couple minutes left here. I want to ask you about the physical spaces that you talk about, because they're really important in this book. You talk about your childhood home. You write about your home in L.A., how you put down literal roots when you plant a garden. What does it mean to be rooted in a place and in yourself, Jenny Slate?
That is so scary to only have a little bit of time to answer, as is every question.
A minute.
I guess it means that you are intentionally saying, this is a space for the creature that I am, and I intend to be the person here who might last forever, rather than, like, I'm just going to adorn this space with some decorations for what holiday is happening right now. It's more about, everywhere I go, I'm going to treat this place like I could dwell here forever. And like everything makes a difference. Every way that I am, every behavior that I do, every assertion that I make in this space is part of forever. So I want it to be good. Mm. And that opportunity is always there. Even if you do end up leaving, it'll always be worth the time to have been somewhere in a substantial and respectful way.
Well, thank you so much, Jenny Slate. I appreciate your time. We have one last request for a last little moment, a last little bit with Marcel.
Oh, you want me to do it or you're going to do it?
You're going to do it.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Go ahead, Marcel. 10 seconds.
I'm really scared because time is ticking, but thank you for having me on the radio. And I just want to say that everybody that's listening should have a really good rest of their day and a really good dream tonight and a really nice life if they can. And I love you.
Jenny Slate.
Thank you.
Actor and stand-up comedian, author of Little Weirds and voice of the endearing Marcel. Thanks so much for being with us today. Really appreciate your time, Jenny.
Thank you, Jane. This is really nice. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Justin Dom, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Wes Martin, James Ross, Dori Schreimer, Alex Schroeder, Grace Tatter, and Adam Waller. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.